This is Play It Cool, a Stranger Things fanfic written by Boudica Muse and read by Rena Jenkins. The story is rated R and contains the pairing Steve Harrington, Eddie Munson, with additional tags for alternate universe, modern setting, alternate universe, no upside down. Rock star Eddie Munson, pop star Steve Harrington, flirting through cover songs, masturbation. This is part two of the series, Richard Sykin quote prompt fills. Others notes. You will find Illuminating on Tumblr sent me the prompt, I like him and I want to be like him, off of this prompt list of Richard Sykin quotes. Thank you so much, this was a lot of fun to work on. The title is from Baby by Justin Bieber. See the end notes for why in God's name I would name a fic after that song. It's the first real free day Steve's had in weeks, and he is determined to make sure it stays free. No last-minute interviews, no urgent calls, and absolutely no songwriting. That last part shouldn't be hard. He's so burned out after his last stint in the studio that it would take a miracle to squeeze even one more lyric out of him. So today, it's just him and Robin, their legs all tangled up as they become one with the couch, a baseball game on the enormous TV he never gets to watch, and a buffet of takeout containers spread all over the coffee table. It's all pretty much perfect. Right up until Robin gasps and jerks so hard in surprise at whatever she's watching on her phone that she very narrowly misses kicking Steve in the balls. Hey, what the hell? Sorry. Her eyes jump from his face and back to her phone a couple of times.
What is it?
Nothing. It's nothing. It's a blatant lie, and one she looks weirdly guilty over. But whatever. Steve doesn't want anything to do with phones or the internet or the world outside his house today. So she can just keep whatever it is that's got her so shook up to herself. Steve rolls off the couch and onto his feet with a grunt and shakes at his bruised thigh, giving Robin a half-hearted glare as he passes her on the way to the kitchen. She doesn't even notice, what with the way her eyes are glued to her screen, and she's barely holding in her laughter. He doesn't want to know. When he returns a minute later with one of the tiny ice cream cones his trainer has expressly forbidden because he can never eat less than five at a time, she's still absorbed in whatever she is watching. But now, she looks sort of stunned. Her eyes meet his over the top of her phone as he sits down, and she bites her lip, looking torn.
He doesn't want to know.
He doesn't. He can already tell it's something about him. Probably some stupid TMZ story about how the paps caught him taking out his garbage bins and his high school gym shorts again. Robin takes out her earbud and holds it out with a determined glint in her eye. I need you to watch something. Steve groans, but she's already pressing the phone into his hand and shoving an earbud into his right ear. The video she has queued up is frozen on some band, and the title of the video reads, Corroded Coffin at Live Nation Arena covers... The band name sounds vaguely familiar, and he thinks there might be some mid-level rock band, or maybe they're punk. Not Steve's thing at all. He couldn't name one of their songs with a gun to his head. Whatever they're covering is cut off, but he can guess. I'm really not in the mood for this.
Trust me, you're going to love it. With a heavy sigh, he curls back into the divot he left on the couch and presses play on the video she's queued up. Noise hammers his right eardrum, but even through the incongruent crash of drums, he knows from the very first bar which song this is. Teddy Bear always stirs up complicated feelings for Steve. Engineered by the best Swedish hitmakers Money Goodbye, the song had been rightfully panned by critics as derivative, and just as rightfully been a massive success with preteen girls. It was catchy, it was soulless, and it had made Steve an international pop superstar at 16. On stage, the band's lead singer is really hamming it up, screaming out the lyrics like he's at some drunken karaoke night and shaking his leather-clad hips to the beat. Steve isn't sure why he's surprised the guy knows all the words. The song's been out for over a decade now. Even people who aren't fans would have been subjected to it over and over again until their brains sponged up the words. There's something about the way the guy is smiling around the words as he sings them, though. His dimples deepening, and his eyes crinkling with how wide it is. Whoever shot this video either had a great seat or an even better zoom function on their camera. But Steve's sure that even people up in the cheap seats of this arena could tell how much fun this guy is having with his song. Steve's song, which is really just Max Martin's song, which in the end never really belonged to anyone but Richard Harrington. The band finishes the second verse, and the singer rips right into an extended guitar solo. It's impressive, but Steve's seen enough. Yeah, not bad. I'm sure their fans really loved getting some bubblegum pop with the hard rock they ordered. He hits pause and tries to hand the phone back, but Robin pushes it away. Keep watching, there's more. I swear to God, you're going to love this. With an eye roll, Steve presses play again. The band's frontman is capable enough as a singer, but guitar is clearly where his real talent lies. His ringed fingers dance over the frets, and at first, it just seems like an excuse to show off. But then the arpeggios and speed picking morph and resolve into another melody. It takes an extra two bars before Steve catches on to exactly what it is, right as the drummer comes back in with a simmering cymbal tap. Oh, shit. Uh-huh. Robin rests her chin on her palm and gives a smug little eyebrow pop. How the hell do they even... Robin waves a hand, shushing him. Listen! It's really good. Well, of course it's good. It's my song, Robin. His song. And his alone. Skull Rock was the first album Steve released after firing his dad as his manager, and he'd put everything he had into it. All of the new adult angst he'd had in him at 22, all of the creativity he'd been forced to stifle as his dad's puppet pop star, and all of the sex he'd only been allowed to hint at until then. The song they're playing now, Backseat Lover, was never a hit. It never even made it into radio play. It was a B-side. His producer only agreed to keep it because they needed some filler to round out the album. It's also his favorite. The lyrics are the same, and so is the melody, but they've turned his moody make jam into an 80s power ballad. Corroded Coffin's take on it is heavier, louder, and dripping with sex appeal. Or maybe that's just the lead singer. Steve can't take his eyes off him as he scrapes his long curls back from his face and arches his neck like he's asking for it to be bitten. He's seriously bringing some white snake energy to this song, but forget the hot blondes from all those old music videos. This guy is the one Steve wants to see half naked and writhing to the beat on the hood of some muscle car.
Who are these guys?
You're joking, right? Corroded Coffin? Rolling Stone called them the next Metallica. They headlined Bonnaroo last year. You've seriously never heard of them.
I've heard of them. I've just never heard them.
And you can't seriously expect me to know who the hell is at Bonnaroo when I spent half of the summer bouncing from one Asian airport to another and the other half in a recording studio.
Who's the lead singer?
That would be Eddie Munson. He hasn't looked away, but he can hear the smirk in her voice. And the drummer's Gareth Jones, and the guitarist. He shushes her, waving his hand in her face like he's waving away an irritating fly, and ignores her snort of laughter. On stage, Eddie stretches out the final chord of the song, tilting his guitar and curling around it like the sound isn't coming from the guitar or the massive stacks of speakers framing the stage, but like he's unspooling the thread of it right out of his own body. He releases the note with a final rip on the guitar strings and tosses his hair back from his face. And as his guitar strap pulls the open neck of his shirt aside, it's just enough for Steve to spot a couple of dark smudges of ink on his chest before the video ends. He taps watch again, but Robin snags the phone out of his hands and takes her earbud back with a laugh. If you're going to perv, do it on your own phone. I'm not perving. I just want to make sure I appreciated it properly. It was a good cover. He did a great job. Robin raises her eyebrows, silently waiting for him to dig himself deeper. But he knows that move, and he isn't going to fall for it this time.
They did a good job. You know, for a punk band.
A punk band? Her eyes go wide with suppressed laughter.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the kind of stuff I listen to normally, but I like the spin they put on it.
He's careful to remember it was more than just Eddie Munson playing the song this time, but he feels a phantom shovelful of dirt hit his head anyway.
I've always said a good cover needs to change things up. I say that all the time.
I've literally never heard you say anything about covers ever, but sure, all the time. The baseball game on TV isn't as interesting after that, but Steve manages to hold off on tracking down his phone until much later that night. He finds it deep in a pile of laundry, and he ignores all of the unread texts and missed calls in favor of watching the video again 3 times. And then he falls face first into one rabbit hole after another, reading about the band, and learns they've had the same lineup since high school, and they play metal, not punk. But it's only so long before he gives into what he really wants to know, and narrows his search to Eddie Munson in particular. The guy's Twitter is deeply weird in a fascinating sort of way, posting about tour dates 1 second, and a long, detailed history of satanic panic in the 80s the next, and then following it all up with ecstatic praise for the hand-drawn porn of some fantasy characters he commissioned. If the NSFW elf on orc action wasn't enough to convince him Eddie isn't totally straight, Steve learns that Eddie's been openly bisexual for almost as long as his band's been around. He would be lying if he said that bit of trivia didn't give him a sick little thrill of hope and jealousy. But no one's around, so there's no need to lie. Tweeting the video is such a non-decision, it feels like a compulsion. But Steve hesitates over whether he should tag Eddie or not. In the end, he feels like it comes off as a little too unchill and settles for adding, "This was awesome. I've never headbanged to my own music before." The tweet racks up over 1,000 likes in the time it takes Steve to get up and go brush his teeth. And after that, he turns it off and hides it back in the pile of laundry, so he can go another few hours without having to deal with the outside world. Three days later, Robin sends him a YouTube link without comment. He's got his equilibrium back a bit. He no longer feels the need to hide from every new notification, but he's still taking advantage of the break and sleeping in until he physically can't stand being in bed anymore. Which is why, even though it's mid-afternoon, he is still in bed, eyes barely cracked open, and his dick stiff with morning wood, when he clicks on the link and Eddie Munson's grinning face lights up his dark bedroom. A jolt of heat zings through his belly, and Steve shifts on his pillows, holding the phone closer to his face for a better look. He's obviously on some late-night show, judging by the setup and the way he waves to some invisible crowd. And he is hot as hell, even offstage. Steve can't name why, because there's nothing special about his appearance. Eddie's dressed head to toe in black, and the only indication he's given that he knew he was being interviewed beforehand is that at least his clothes all seem to be clean. Steve's stylist, on the other hand, agonizes for weeks whenever he has to go on one of these things, and he gets prepped and primped hours in advance. He's just some rocker. Just some guy who would fit right in behind the counter of a guitar center. But then he scrunches up his nose at something someone shouts from the crowd and winks at someone in the front row, and Steve's breath catches in his throat. Jesus Christ. He wants to climb on top of him in that ugly blue chair and find out what his skin tastes like. The camera switches to Jimmy Fallon's face, and Steve reflexively flinches away from it. Eddie, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks, man. I'm happy to be here.
Well, we're glad you could take the time to come out. I know you've been busy with touring.
Eddie groans and wipes a hand over his face as he laughs.
Oh, man. Understatement. We're right in the middle of it. I gotta fly out of here as soon as this is over to catch up with the band, and if I don't make it to Boston in time for soundcheck, my tour manager is gonna have my ass. He turns to the camera with a grin that is somehow both charming and sarcastic.
Sorry to ruin the magic, guys. We don't actually film these things live. It's like 2 p.m. right now.
Jimmy laughs nervously, but that's kind of his default state.
But so it's been fun?
Oh, it's been so fun. I'm having a blast, man. I love touring. The long hours, the energy from the crowds.
He pops to his feet and climbs onto his chair, putting one foot on Jimmy's desk and holding up his arms like he's summoning power from some unseen source.
It's just this mass of humanity. Singing my own words back at me loud enough, it'll rip your face right off.
He shakes his fists at the crowd in front of him, and they cheer loudly. He makes a beckoning motion with his hands, and the cheers get louder and louder. Eddie cupping a hand to his ear and his grin stretching from ear to ear, while Jimmy looks like his face indeed might rip right off his skeleton from the volume. Eddie makes a cut motion, and the crowd quiets. He jumps back down to the ground and remembers the original use for his chair while turning a boyish smile on Jimmy.
It's like that. How could you not love hearing that every night?
Jimmy clears his throat and straightens his tie like that'll give him some control over the interview again. That nervous little smile on his lips that he never really seems to lose.
Well, so earlier this week, a video from one of your shows went viral thanks to how much fun you were having.
The video cuts away to a short clip of Eddie screaming out the chorus to Teddy Bear. And when the camera's back on Eddie, he laughs and nods, looking like this might be the 50th time he's had to talk about it today.
Yeah, we do covers all the time. You know, Courage to Coffin actually started out as a cover band.
He nods at Jimmy's intrigued look. We played nothing but Metallica and Slayer and Megadeth covers for years until I finally figured out how songwriting worked. Guys and I still love getting together just to jam on our favorite songs, and we play a cover of something almost every show. I don't know why this one was such a hit, but I'm glad people liked it.
Really? You don't know why?
Eddie spreads his hands.
I mean, okay, I get that the juxtaposition of our two opposing genres makes for an intriguing sound. It's unusual, right? A metal band covering the poppiest pop song of all time. I guess I shouldn't be surprised. The human brain lights up with excitement anytime something unexpected happens.
Steve's own brain is lighting up like a pinball machine, hearing the word juxtaposition coming out of Eddie's mouth. He'd suspected he was smart from the Twitter rants, but Steve could sit and listen to him rattle off advanced vocabulary words about their opposing musical styles all day long. Feeling almost guilty about it, his hand reaches down to give his cock a firm squeeze. Jimmy nods, blissfully unaware that his interview subject is driving at least one member of his audience wildly horny with his intelligence. The key to good comedy is to keep the audience on their toes. No, you got it all wrong. This wasn't comedy. I didn't cover Steve Harrington as a joke. I'm a fan, man. Always have been. I mean, I'd give you the whole spiel, how I had his poster up on my wall and everything, but... Here, Eddie pauses and spreads his hands, a mischievous grin lighting up his face. I kept all my pictures of Steve under the mattress, not up on the wall.
Oh, well, now that is unexpected. So we're talking about a little crush, huh? Big crush.
He's so matter-of-fact about it. So unafraid. The awe Steve feels at watching someone be so unabashedly honest with themselves filters into the arousal that has been slowly building since Eddie popped up on his phone screen. It mixes with the flush of pride he gets at hearing Eddie had a crush on him and produces a slurry of heat and lust that spreads throughout his body and makes his cock throb in his hand.
Christ.
He can't believe he's jerking off to a fucking Jimmy Fallon interview.
So you know he saw the video, right?
What? Eddie gasps, big and dramatic.
He did. How do you know? He tweeted about it.
Steve's tweet comes up on the screen as Jimmy reads it off. And Steve groans and lets go of his dick long enough to grab a pillow to shove against his face. Maybe if he tries hard enough, he can smother himself and this will all be over. He only peels it away again because he has the sudden, heart-stopping need to double-check that he didn't misspell anything. But the video cuts back to the interview before he can read it.
I got Steve Harrington headbanging.
Eddie tucks a lock of hair in front of his face, completely failing to hide his adorably shy smile.
That's amazing. I don't even know what to say to that. I wish I could have seen it. With that hair of his, it would have been magnificent.
Magnificent. The word shoots a shiver down Steve's spine. The rest of the interview is devoted to Eddie promoting some small part he has in the upcoming Dungeons & Dragons movie, but the individual words blur into nonsensical patter, and Steve's vision narrows to the column of Eddie's throat, the twist of his hand on his knee.
Steve's hand is a blur, too, his legs twisting in the kicked-off sheets as he works at his cock.
He can tell the interview is wrapping up, and Steve thinks he might have to start it over again.
It might be better that way, anyhow.
He can slow it down, drag it out, feel the rush of heat all over again as Eddie talks about his crush on him. Then Eddie reaches up to his throat, hooking his fingers in the chain of his necklace and tilting his head just so.
And there's no slowing it down after that.
Not with the sudden, insistent image Steve gets of Eddie on his knees in front of him, his head tilted to blink those big, soft eyes up at him. In his head, it's Steve's hand hooked around his chain, Eddie's pulse fast and fluttery against the backs of his fingers.
No, there's nothing to drag out once he gets that image in his head.
He comes hard and hot all over his belly, before the Roots even start up their outro music. Steve wishes he could take credit for the idea, but it's Robin who thinks of him doing a cover of his own. About a week after the Jimmy Fallon interview, she finds him in the kitchen one evening and raises judgy eyebrows his way.
You memorized their discography yet?
Steve closes the corroded coffin video he was watching and sets his phone face down on the breakfast bar with a scowl.
It's unfortunately a pretty fair question.
In the past week, he's done nothing but watch corroded coffin videos, scroll through photo shoots of the band, and jack off to increasingly ludicrous fantasies of Eddie blowing him in the bathroom at an after party after he's won a Grammy for Best Pop Vocal Album.
Their music's surprisingly not bad, which shouldn't be a surprise at all, considering how big they are.
It's way harder than the stuff Steve usually listens to, and not every album has been a winner. But there's definitely a little bit of musical genius in Eddie's guitar riffs. And the way he looks in his videos when he's really zeroed in on his solos?
Jesus. You know what would really blow his mind?
His words coming straight out of your lips. She adds a little suggestive eyebrow waggle, as if she needs that.
What? I can't do this kind of music. Like, at all.
So change it up. Turn it into your kind of music. She smirks and pushes away from the counter.
You're always saying a good cover changes things up, right?
She grabs a soda from the fridge, which must have been her reason for coming into the kitchen all along, and leaves Steve alone with his tumbling thoughts.
He really can't do metal, even a little bit. It's not him at all.
But the lyrics on Stand and Defend are really impressive. And Eddie's solo in the bridge has a classical vibe that would translate really well to piano.
He's up and moving toward his music room before he can even finish the thought.
A day and a half, 5 takeout orders, and 1 jerk-off session, necessary when Steve thought a little too hard about what Eddie's reaction to this would be later, Steve's ready to post the video.
He's proud of the way he reworked the song. It slowed way down and sexed way up.
He cut any hint of the original's driving guitar riffs and the heavy bass line and stripped it down to just the bare essentials. His voice and some backing chords. The verses are short but powerful, and the chorus is really just one repeating line that works way better shouted than crooned, but Steve uses the repetition to build on his held chords and lets them multiply into the stacked arpeggios of Eddie's gorgeous solo. The end result is far more awesome than Steve was even hoping for.
So, it's done? It's awesome. It just needs to find its way off his phone and into Eddie's ears. Just do it already. It needs a caption. And I have to, like, tag him, don't I? Jesus, this is so desperate. You know what? I'm deleting it. No one has to know this ever happened except me and you. Robin shrugs, looking kind of disappointed, but understanding. Yeah, I mean, I guess if you... She swipes the phone from his hands and lunges away, stumbling over her own feet as Steve grabs for the phone. He gets a hand around her arm, but she's wearing her huge grandpa cardigan she always puts on at his house because she loves turning the AC down as far as she can stand it. His fingers catch on the thick knit of the sleeve, but she's able to slither out of it like the snake she is, and she leaves him holding it as she disappears into the bathroom. Robin! Robin, this isn't funny! He pounds on the door, but it's quiet on the other side. Too quiet. Robin, please, it was a stupid idea. Just let me delete it, and I'll move on from this stupid crush like a sane person instead. The door opens, and Robin promptly hands over the phone. You posted it, didn't you? I did. When Eddie Munson drags you away to his sex dungeon, I'm moving in here full-time. You could already live here full-time if you wanted. Yeah, but it's more fun if I get the pool and the espresso machine to myself. He swipes through his socials, trying to figure out where she has posted the video, and to his utter despair, finds that the answer is everywhere. She has cross-posted it to every one of his accounts. There is one small mercy, though. Oh, thank God. You only tagged the band's official account. You're welcome. Didn't want you to look like a total thirsty bitch. Just a little bit of a thirsty bitch? He asks wryly. Robin nods. Just enough. The video racks up views and likes and pretty much spreads like wildfire. It doesn't take long for someone to connect the dots on why Steve might have reciprocated a cover like this. It's not like he was trying to hide it or be shy about it, but it still puts a whirlpool of doubt in the pit of his stomach. He's not out to anyone but the closest of his friends. The fan reaction is split pretty evenly between love and hate. And he wants to ignore all of it and hide under his blankets upstairs, but he's glued to his notifications all night long, scrolling through homophobic rants and rainbow emojis alike in search of any response from Eddie himself. He sleeps a little, waking up every couple of hours to check his phone again before tossing it aside in frustration. In the morning, there's still nothing indicating Eddie has seen it. Maybe I should have tagged him, Robin muses. Or maybe he did see it, and he's politely ignoring the musical equivalent of a dick pic I just sent him. Robin cocks her head, confused. Don't gay guys like dick pics? Steve sinks deeper into the couch, and pulls his blanket over his head. Usually. Inside his blanket cocoon, Steve opens up Twitter for the millionth time. His notifications are guaranteed to still be a mess, so he skips them and goes straight to Eddie's profile. And right at the top, right where everyone can see it, he's quote tweeted Steve's video. His only addition is, well, I've never masturbated to my own music before, but there's a first for everything. Steve tries to get Robin's attention, but all that comes out is a strangled, wordless noise, and he has to rip the blanket back and wave his phone in her face to get the point across. She reads the tweet, her eyebrows slowly creeping up her forehead with every word, before she turns to him, fighting a grin. What do you do now?
Send him a real dick pic?
The 66th Annual Grammy Awards the following February are a star-studded affair. Steve takes Robin as his plus one like he usually does, and he holds her hand tight in his when they call out the nominees for Best Pop Vocal Album, just like he's done twice before. Hearing his name a second time, right after, "And the winner is..." That part's new. The little statue's heavier than it looks. That's what everyone always says, but Steve's still shocked by the weight of it in his hand. He cradles it carefully to his chest as he finds Robin in the audience, beaming up at him from her seat. He thanks all of the usual suspects first, the fans, the label, his producers and agent. He saves Robin for last, thanking her for being his best friend and his other half. And that's it. That's the end of the speech he'd rehearsed in the limo ride. His feet won't take him away from the mic, though. "There's one more person I want to thank." He takes a deep breath and searches for Eddie's face in the audience this time. He's hunched over in his seat, his hand covering his mouth. But Steve can still see the smile he's hiding in his big, beautiful eyes. "We didn't meet until after I had already finished recording Winnebago, but since then, they taught me new ways to appreciate my own music that I never would have thought possible. I think you can hear it all through the album that I was searching for something more, and I found it in this person. So I want to thank them for being the answer to the question this album was asking." In all of his fantasies, they make it to the after party at Universal before Eddie corners him in the bathroom and sucks his brain out through his dick. In reality, they only get as far as the limo. The driver's polite enough to circle the block a few times so they can finish. The end.
Author's notes. Max Martin is a Swedish record producer and songwriter responsible for writing hits for artists like Britney Spears, Backstreet Boys, and Katy Perry. A lot of pop hits are written by Swedish songwriters, but he is the most prolific when it comes to writing number one hits. Steve's song Teddy Bear is based on Justin Bieber's Baby, and his early career was very similar to Justin's. The vibes for Steve's song Backseat Lover would be very similar to Nick Jonas's Chains, though I imagine his career and popularity to be more similar to Harry Styles' current status. It was difficult to find an exact match for how I imagined Steve's cover of Stand and Defend, but Tori Amos' cover of Slayer's Raining Blood comes closest. Corroded Coffin's covers don't have any specific song inspiration that I can point you to, but metal bands cover pop music all the time, and there are some great playlists on Spotify that I encourage you to check out. And of course, Eddie's quote tweet about Steve's cover was inspired by Caleb Folliwell's reaction to Beyoncé covering Sex on Fire. "She made the song a lot better. She made me masturbate to my own song." Thanks for reading. If you got this far, please remember to leave a kudos. If you really want to make my day, though, comments are what keep me going, and I would love to hear about your favorite part. Reader's notes. This podfic was recorded at the office. I'm going to have to do some heavy-duty noise removal to take out all of the background fan humming. Thank you so much to Boudica Muse for having blanket permission to podfic. Hope you enjoyed it. Thank you for listening. Have a nice day.